This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I recently found out that you can see a personal dietitian covered by insurance. There's this platform called Nourish that will match you with a dietitian based on whatever your concerns are, whether that's weight loss, eating disorders, autoimmune conditions, or something else. They're actually a network with major insurance providers, so most patients pay $0 out of pocket. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
I actually spoke to somebody today at Excel Sports Management, which is Tucker's agency, and I made them give me an estimate for Tucker's eventual contract, whether it be in free agency or an in-season extension. And the number they gave was 10 years, $475 million. Sure, it's a biased source within his agency. Of course, they're going to promote him, absolutely. But I thought it was actually somewhat reasonable. And I think it's a good over-under for what he eventually will receive. Now, when you get three or four other big market teams in there, which I think Excel would be very inclined to do instead of letting the Cubs bid against themselves with an extension, that number could obviously move up. But I think that kind of money is what Tom Ricketts and the Cubs front office should be thinking about if they want to compete with the other large market teams on Kyle Tucker.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That actually seems like a reasonable deal.
Well, that was Lance Brozdowski on the Marquee Sports Network, and he works there. I think this is a fascinating nugget that he reported, unearthed, speculated about, however you want to describe it, but it definitely is worth following up on. Lance Brozdowski contacted somebody at the agency that represents Kyle Tucker and floated this idea of a $475 million 10-year contract that would be in the ballpark, in the neighborhood of what Kyle Tucker would sign for. Yeah. And as absurd as it might sound, it does seem a little low.
Well, I mean,
it does seem a little low based on what we heard from John Heyman.
Yeah,
saying the $500 million was the baseline.
Yeah, so you see a $500 million deal over 14 years, and John said, well, that's the baseline of what Tucker could command on the open market. And, you know, I get it. He's already here, and he's already playing, and he looks awful good. He's as good as advertised. And you're talking about his prime years too, right? Mm-hmm. So it feels like that is a better deal than the one he eventually could get. That's a worse deal than the one he could probably make up to 550, not 475, which sounds absurd, but that's not awful. I'm just saying, given all the contracts, and I guess one of the things would be, when you're signing your own guy, there is like more of a hometown discount.
Did Vlad Guerrero give the Blue Jays a hometown discount?
No, they went to Vlad and they wanted to sign him to a $150 million deal years ago, and he wanted $220 million. So they didn't do it. Then they came back to him and they were going to give him $300 million. And he wanted like $350 million, so they didn't do it.
Well, and all we're
so
learning,
then they go back to him and get him for $500 million.
Yeah,
see what I'm saying,
but it's no bargain, and I think it's an investment in their future. It also is a representative of a franchise that in Toronto they could not miss again on another big swing, and they have taken a few. The Cubs have as well. What's interesting about the Vlad Guerrero deal, as we're beginning to learn, is that his portion of it is guaranteed with signing bonuses through what would be a anticipated work stoppage. Dustin, you saw some of this yesterday, correct? And you thought it was as interesting as I did, because it was one of those things where players looking ahead, the agencies looking ahead, at the end of next year, as we keep on talking about, a work stoppage looms. Then there will be no money. There will be no money. And I think this contract, from Vlad Guerrero's point of view, apparently protects him against such thing.
Yeah, they said $325 million signing bonus. So all of that upfront, guaranteed, even protected from a potential future work stoppage. And
that's,
I think this is
money.
Maybe kind of a compass, if you will, as to why we've seen some guys, younger and older, that are about to become free agents signing deals. Because I think they want that guaranteed money during the work stoppage, and there's no guarantee what's to come after the work stoppage. I mean, these guys are all going to still be very, very wealthy and be doing very, very well, but will there be some kind of a negotiation where
they're
going
to try to get a salary cap?
Right. And, yeah. You know, and then if there's a cap, there's going to have to probably be a floor.
There will be very different, could be a very different salary structure after the next CBA. That's why there will be a lot of people racing to get a big deal before the next CBA.
And maybe this plays into Cubs ownership's hand. Maybe.
It could, if you're of the belief that they want to invest that kind of money.
It's still an awful lot of money.
It is. For one player, yeah. No doubt about it.
And you could sit it out and hope you get to a reasonable cap that you then could...
Well, you would lose him before then.
Well, you would totally lose him.
If you are going to take that stance, I think that would be the defensible position by some people, some ownership groups.
He's definitely gone.
Yeah.
If you take that stance.
If you're going to have to explain yourself before that even becomes a reality. Then you would be banking on a work stoppage, and you would be, you know, making a decision in the offseason of 2025 for something that's going to happen in the offseason of 2026.
I was watching, they did like a list of the top free agents. I think it's your guy, Brian Kenny, who did it, Dustin. It was like, well, Tucker is by far the number one guy on the market, and he will be the one that everybody who wants to spend money will pursue. After him, do you know he had second? Bo Bichette, depending on how he does this year, what kind of bounce back he has after a subpar year. But the idea being shortstop who can hit like that, there's always a market for guys like that.
They're going to overpay for him. That's a big drop off between Kyle Tucker and Bo Bichette. And it underscores why Kyle Tucker would, if I were his representative, yeah, you might keep the dialogue open with the Cubs, because that's just smart to do and it's good business. But I think also, given who else is a free agent next offseason, you would want to be the guy everybody wants.
Yeah.
And you would go to the open market and see what your value is. So that's a defensible spot. As much as I hate to acknowledge that, and as much as I would love to see them come to a deal and sign an extension before the end of the season, I'm not sure it's that realistic. I'm not even sure it's that realistic to expect. Because, yeah, we could talk about, you know, internet reports and people whispering about the Cubs and Kyle Tucker's agency are going to get together and collaborate and maybe talk about the parameters of a deal. But do you realistically think they're going to come to an agreement before the end of this year?
I don't know. I don't know what kind of stomach they have for spending that kind of money. And I think that's the missing. The question isn't of his value. I think we got a good framework for what his value is. I just don't know how they feel about actually spending that amount of money.
I think that's a fair question. And the framework for his value doesn't come just because you're basing it on a small sample size of 14 games to begin this season.
No.
It's just a continuation of what we have seen in Houston.
Wasn't he a five-war player in Houston?
Yeah, he brought all his tools to Chicago. He's a five-tool player, and they all made the trip to Chicago. He is one of the best players in baseball, easily, conservatively, a top 10 player, arguably a top 5 player, and he's going to get paid accordingly. So when you look at it from those terms, yeah, they could have conversations, but I just don't know how serious they would be given the realities of Kyle Tucker betting on himself because of the free agent class that will be that he'll be at the top of.
Yeah. It's a really interesting story to follow, and I'm sure we will be doing so throughout the course of the year. But like I said, I think the missing piece of information, it isn't about his value; it's about how they value him.
That's it. But they're not gonna tip their hand. We asked Carter Hawkins about it yesterday. He referenced Jed Hoyer's comments. He basically said that verbatim. I'm going to tell you what Jed said. He's going to quote Jed, and they're just going to play this out. We haven't heard necessarily from Tom Ricketts except for before the season at the Cub convention what he had to say, and that quote got a lot of mileage that I don't think they wanted to get. But if you are Kyle Tucker's agency, I have to give a lot of credit from what we do, Lance Brozdowski, for going out and getting a specific sourcing a speculative, you know, term.
Right.
10 years, $475 million.
Yeah. Okay. So we know, I think we knew already it was in that ballpark, but that's confirmation that it's in that ballpark. And again, can he go ask Tom, would you spend half a billion dollars on a player?
Has he gotten a night off yet? I don't think Kyle Tucker has played. I think he's played in every game. And I ask only because yesterday the White Sox, desperate for runs, gave Luis Robert Jr. the day off. I just don't think you can do that or afford to do that, even though he's hitting. It's a much different scenario comparing the production levels. But
still plan on trading Luis Robert.
They do, and they should. But he has to get to a certain point where he's tradable.
He has to hit his weight.
That would be a good start. Yeah. What's he weighing these days?
He's got to be around
205.
He's got to be roughly 195 to 205, I'd say, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, he's.
How tall is he? 6'3"?
He's athletic. He's got skills. We haven't seen that player though in a couple years.
Yeah.
He had a tremendous 2023. Dropped off the map in 2024, and off to a very difficult start in 2025.
Now, he needs to get on a heater just to get him a few wins. He really does. He needs. They don't have many professional bats on that team, as we've talked about already this morning. It would be good if the guy who is their best player proved to be their best player. But I don't know. I don't even know. You always worry. When someone has been in the kind of situation he's been in, and I mean losing team, piling up losses, all the guys he knew he came up with are all pretty much gone. He's kind of the last man standing. You don't know how that impacts someone's confidence. And you don't know how the dreadful years wear you out as a player. So, you know, that could be say, hey, you might get something special here if you can get his confidence back and get him in a different situation. But you also have to be realistic and say, this is what his numbers look like. So, you know, I'm sure there are teams willing to take a chance on him, but they're not willing to give up much.
Well, that means the Sox might be, and this is maybe the wrong way to put it, or maybe it isn't, but they might be stuck with him. Might be stuck with him this year.
Yeah, they're out of luck with him. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah. Well, unless he recaptures what we have seen before, and that's the thing. Right. The potential is there because he's provided the production. You can believe that he has those skills because he's used them. But
David, there's no protection whatsoever ahead of him or behind him in the lineup.
That's the biggest problem. And the best outfield prospect that they have right now is probably still a ways away in Braden Montgomery.
Yeah, where is he? He's in Class A, isn't he? I think he's down with the Cannonballers or the Dash. I don't remember which, but he's pretty far from the major leagues.
He's pretty far from the majors. The other Montgomery is not hitting well at all.
He might be farther from the majors.
Well, it makes you wonder because remember when they sent Chase Meidroth and Colson Montgomery to Charlotte?
Yeah.
We talked about, in theory, that there would be a race back to Chicago and who would come first. That was an easy decision, as it turned out. Chase Meidroth comes to the White Sox this weekend. He'll make his debut tonight with an OPS at Charlotte of 1.015, I believe. And Colson Montgomery, I think, has struck out 13 times and 37 at-bats, something like that. It's bad.
I believe they're going to have to DFA someone today. In order to add.
Whoa.
Yes.
Who?
We can speculate, but I believe they are at the 40-man limit, and they've announced they're bringing up Chase Meidroff. So they're going to need to clear out a 40-man spot in order for him to move into the major leagues. So they've already announced him coming up. They have yet to announce who they're going to DFA. You know, we all have different ideas on that. What's Jake Amaya doing for a living? Could he be sent?
He's not hitting. He's hitting just, like 105, I think, and he was down to.
And I haven't looked recently, but I think they still have a pitcher on the roster that doesn't belong on the team.
So you know how you get these headlines and you wonder, you don't want to connect any dots. Yeah. And I'm not saying, but when you said that and I saw Colson Montgomery was scratched from the lineup at AAA on Thursday, was that just to give him a day off? Could the back be barking again? That could be the case.
You think he's coming up too?
No, I don't.
I don't know how you bring him up.
I don't know how you bring him up.
He's batting 88.
He's 3 for 37.
Is that good?
No.
I didn't think so.
And he's striking out more than 50% of the time.
That's not good either.
That's not good either.
Okay.
That's just as frustrating because this season, this spring, they were so high on his ability or possibility of claiming that job in spring training. And then he got the back issue. And then he got he had to go sit down and out for about 8 days. And he hasn't been the same player since.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, and I'm not being mean, he wasn't the good player last year. He just was a good player in Arizona Fall League. And that was after...
Those 3 weeks, though, the
But that
the
was
Sox,
after a pretty crummy...
Yeah, it was.
...season in minor leagues.
That maybe it was a misevaluation, then, if they're taking those 3 weeks and prioritizing them or putting more weight on them than the previous 3 months.
But I think what happens is... A guy is off the boil, and you can't figure out why, and he's supposed to be better. He's supposed to be getting better. And then you get him in, and you're like, oh, thank God, he's finally better. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he's going to be a part of our team, and then he's no good again.
Yeah, you really had a lot of people wanting to see progress.
That's part of it.
But you had to really squint to see it. It was hard to detect. And unfortunately, because you know I would love to see him be the everyday shortstop, but now it's looking like he's got to regain his hitting stroke and eye, and defensively they've got to find a home for him because it doesn't appear that his shortstop is going to be the future.
But this, we're at a very interesting position when we're talking about this because this is sometimes what happens with projected stars. They don't make it. And I'm just saying, if this guy doesn't make it, and I'm not saying that that's been determined one way or another, but he got up. He was their number one prospect at one point. Now they got two or three players ahead of him. Mm-hmm. But my point is simply, if you draft this guy and you wait these years and then he doesn't make it, what does that say about the way they're building the current team?
Well, that's a big picture conclusion that you would be, I guess, inclined to draw. I do think it would be I don't know that Colson Montgomery's failure would give me any sort of pause in having hope in Noah Schultz or Hagen Smith.
Well, there are different positions, obviously pitchers versus, and hopefully those guys are up faster.
Right. But
it does speak to player development, David.
Yeah.
If you drafted a guy out of high school and you got him in the minors and you kept projecting this and projecting that and none of it happened, then you wonder let's just talk about position players.
Okay, position players. I think that's fair to do because I do think there are two different approaches, perhaps, in terms of developing pitchers. Okay, you want to talk concerns about the White Sox. Player development with positional players is a fair concern and a good topic of conversation. As it pertains to pitching prospects, I would be more inclined, and we have asked this question with Brian Bannister on this station, and I think big picture Chris Getz, the next time we get him, about the rash of surgeries that pitching prospects have undergone.
Not a Tommy John surgery.
Six prospects have undergone Tommy John surgery in the White Sox organization over the past 6 months. And so
it's less than that. It's like it's since training camp, right?
Has it been the last 6 weeks? Okay.
I mean, I'm just saying, that's a lot. That's a lot.
It is a lot. And I want to know, if is this a sign of the times? And that's the question of Brian Bannister, or is this something that organizationally they're concerned with what they have seen and what they might be doing? I don't know the answer to that. But I am less, I'm more concerned about injury than I am about progress when it comes to pitching prospects, because you see a lot of guys who are on the right track, seemingly.
I heard A.J. Pierzynski talking, I don't know, it was yesterday or the day before, but he basically wondered, why not bring up Kyle Teal? I mean, I know Kyle Teal's not killing it, but this is a guy that you was the centerpiece of the trade you made with Crochet.
Well, I wondered the same thing.
Well, I just...
Omar Narvaez came up from AA, and he's a veteran major leaguer. But what purpose is he serving if you are going young, you're bringing up Chase Mydroth? Kyle Teal is off to a pretty good start in Charlotte.
And if Lee goes down, why wouldn't you just bring up your next guy?
Lee went down.
So I'm saying.
Yeah, Lee's down.
Why are you going, you know, you got a guy in Birmingham who you want working with that pitching staff, clearly.
You'd like a shade of Teal.
Player. I'd like a.
You'd like a shade of Teal.
Well, I just don't understand. What, like, if you have an opening, what are you waiting for? He's supposed to do better. Well, he didn't jump through all the flaming hoops.
If Chris Getz meets the assembled media tonight before the Red Sox game because of the beginning of a homestand, and he's asked that question, I'd be very curious to see his answer.
Will he be able to kind of fight through his embarrassment about how this team is doing and give an answer?
That's certainly a fascinating way to frame the question. Hmm.
I'm sorry.
You should ask him
I'm
that.
I'm sorry. I would like to merely point out my credentials that I've followed this team my whole life. And I feel a sense of shame about what's going on. So maybe I'm projecting.
Are you projecting a bit?
It's possible.
All right. Well, let's talk golf.
Yeah, we're going to bring
in. Wait. Did I just say that? Let's talk golf.
I don't think we're going to talk golf. I think.
What are the Giants doing with their pick in the draft?
So we are going to talk to Mark Canizzaro, but Dustin's going to make us talk football.
Not me. I am Mr. Golf.
He's specifically making you talk football. All right. We'll talk to Mark. We'll bring him in from the Masters next. Mullion Hall on the Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
Hello, friends. We're going to talk to our friend Mark Cannizzaro of the New York Post, NFL and golf columnist, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Mark, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, boys. How have you been?
Doing well.
We are, we're all fired up. It's a great weekend. We're looking forward to talking some golf with you. We're also going to ask you about your crazy New York quarterbacks. It's just there's so much to go over, for God's sake.
You mean Pittsburgh East?
Help us out. So who did you take in this tournament, and how did I foul up as badly as I did by taking Rory when I knew he'd never won it, and I knew he's had these meltdowns and two double bogeys in the last four holes? Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I'm guilty as charged because I took Rory too. I really thought this was his time. And listen, we're a quarter of the way through, but I think the biggest concern for Rory is probably should be the fact that Scottie Scheffler's four under and got it off to a pretty sterling start. No disrespect whatsoever to Justin Rose, who obviously had a magical round of golf yesterday. I think you can make the argument that the lead to this tournament is closer to what Scottie shot yesterday, because Scottie's not going to go backwards. And I don't see Justin Rose, matching, another 65 this week. So, I mean, certainly not today, but not this week. So I Rory's not out of it, but, I believe 18 out of the last 19 Masters winners have been within four shots, I believe, of lead after a round. So, I mean, listen, that's statistics, and it's a tough climb when you've got to overcome Scottie Scheffler, who is the most consistent and best player in the world.
If that was among the biggest disappointments on day one, what was among the biggest surprises? Was it Justin Rose on top?
I would say the Spanish U.S. amateur pissing in Rays Creek was probably the most surprising yesterday thing to me. and then afterward, kind of doubling down on it and say he'd do it again because he had to go. So, my God,
yeah. That's unbelievable! I didn't see that.
Oh yeah, it was very funny. Yes, this he's a 21-year-old kid. He wasn't really, I don't think, intentionally being disrespectful. I just think it was kind of a product of, with kind of the youth of America, oblivious of, and then not only that, but afterwards he didn't even call it Race Creek. He said he really had to go, and he said, well, I just saw this river over here. I just figured I'd go. For all golf fans, that Race Creek is a pretty sacred ground, if you will, right? Okay. So, but that was very, very funny. But I think where I was surprised, to be honest with you guys, a little bit was, Jon Rahm not playing well. He's kind of fallen off the radar, off the map a bit, with his run at LIV. I believe he's three over, which is, I don't see him overcoming a 10-shot deficit or even a 7-shot to Scottie. But, it's a very, very fun, active, a leaderboard right now, without question. The fact that Scottie's there and the Rose element is very fascinating. This is the fifth time he's either had a share or the lead to himself after the first round at a Masters. which is unbelievable. And he's also led in 9 rounds in his career at Augusta. He's the only guy that's led in that many rounds has never won it before. So that'll be interesting to watch how, you know, see how he rebounds, not rebounds, but how he see what he has for an encore today.
I'm curious, Mark, Jack Nicklaus of all people took a shot at Phil, said that he hasn't been seen or heard from since he went to live or something along those lines. What was your reaction to that? Jack, usually one of the gentlemen out there.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised at that. You know, he was very dismissive. You know, his whole mode was, you know, I mean, I know where he was going, you know, because nobody watches Liv and all that stuff. I mean, even if it's on Fox, I mean, people don't even know where to find it half the time. But yeah, I was oddly dismissive on Jack's part there. And, you know, I thought a little sharp tongued, really, to be honest with you. I was a bit surprised when he said that.
So he said that, but Rory said nothing. And I know it's been a week-long debate, if not longer, about how much golfers should have to speak after the rounds. And certainly Rory has the history in the past. Where have you been on that, Mark, in terms of you've been covering golf a long time? You know how it works, and certainly you're in the New York market. What would you say to people who want to understand this better? How much of a responsibility should they feel to address the media after a round?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously very biased because I am media, and and you know, but I do believe that there's a significant value in these players, you know, speaking to their, you know, the people that are paying the money to go watch them play, and, you know, and I feel that for all sports. And you know, Rory, we actually spoke to Rory about it in his pre-tournament press conference because this came up last month at the Arnold Palmer with Colin Morikawa, who lost a 3-shot lead with 3 to play and just bolted from the place, refused to do any interviews, and he finished runner up in the tournament. And then when we were down at the Players Championship the following week after that, we spoke to Colin about it, and he doubled down on it, said, "I don't owe anybody anything," which wasn't really the way to present that, I didn't think. But and Rory spoke about that actually on Tuesday when we spoke to him, and he said, "Listen, you know, we actually officially are not required." Now, you guys, as you know, we all cover team sports, and you know, the NFL, the NBA, you know, the team sports professionally, they have, you know, it's in the contract for these players that they are contractually obligated to be available to the media in some manner. You know, obviously, we well know some don't adhere to that. But Rory did make, you know, say the other day, he said, "Listen, we are not required." Now, if Jay Monahan wants to, the PGA Tour commissioner wants to, you know, make some sort of a provision, you know, and add that into the player contract, if you will, to PGA Tour, then he probably should. And quite frankly, I think he should with what's happening. Now, Rory, as you remember, guys, you know, bolted from the U.S. Open, you know, last year. Mm-hmm. And listen, I kind of understand it. I mean, it was a devastating loss. He missed a short putt of the 72nd hole. I thought yesterday was a bit petulant to do that, in my opinion. I mean, it's a first round. I get it. You're disappointed. But, you know, golf, for all of us who play it, it pisses you off and is disappointing more often than it's exhilarating and a positive experience if you're really, you know, trying to shoot a score, if you will, right? So I thought that was kind of silly for Rory to leave, you know, without just, you know, it's a very easy thing to do. I think at the end of the day, I think the PGA Tour should implement something for these players where there is a, you know, is a requirement. The problem is if you guys are so rich, they're all multi-gazillionaires.
Right.
You know, what are you going to find them that's going to bother them? You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's the problem in most sports of athletes. You find a guy $20,000, that's like change you find in your couch. So there's not a lot of incentive for them to, you know, to adhere to the rule.
I just wonder when a guy can't meet a moment, when he double bogeys in 2 of the last 4 holes and he's never won the Masters, is it fair to wonder if just the reaction is about kind of mentally breaking down in a way, right? I mean, here's a guy that that, you know, maybe when they, if he ever wins a green jacket, they put it on the wrong way because it's like a straight jacket for you. You just tie him up in the thing. And it's got to be in his head.
Well, it's absolutely in his head. I mean, but the thing is, and respectfully, you know, and I wrote about this leading into the tournament. I would argue that there's no player in Masters history that have played this tournament has faced the level of pressure that Rory has faced coming in here. And it's 11 years since he's won a major at all. This is the 11th try at Augusta to try to complete the career Grand Slam, which only five guys have done. So I respect that pressure. And the thing is, like yesterday, you were talking about two holes. He had two double bogeys on 15 and 17. And quite frankly, 15 was killing everybody yesterday. I mean, obviously Rory probably doesn't know that at the moment. But I believe Patrick Cantlay hit a similar chip that rolled off the back end of the water twice. Matsuyama did it. I didn't think – it wasn't like Rory sculled that chip and it went right flying into the water. You know, I mean, when he first hit it, you're figuring, okay, it's, you know, middle of the green. So, I mean, I don't look at that as a meltdown. You know what I mean? I look at what he did in 2011, you know, when he drilled his drive off of 10 with a large lead with nine holes to play, you know, into the houses in the left woods. That was meltdown. But I didn't really look at that. But obviously that rattled his cage because, you know, then he went, you know, two holes later in doubles,
yeah,
17. And he had it going so well, guys. He was right where he wanted to be. He's four under par. He's right level with Scotty. And I think that's really what was devastating to him because, you know, his issue here has not necessarily been, other than 2011, when he did implode in the final round late, his issue has been really the starts. You know, he's put himself behind the eight ball here with, you know, with some mediocre numbers in the first and second rounds, and then he's on the chase. And you can't really be – it's difficult to be on the chase at Augusta because, you know, there's so much trouble lurking everywhere.
All right, Mark, a football question for you. So – the New York media is probably asking themselves the same question they were wondering about on the Steelers beat last year. Who will win more games as a starter this season, Russell Wilson or Justin Fields?
You know, in a weird way, I actually think, I for what was available on the market, which was not much, obviously, as we know, in the free agent market in the offseason, I actually thought Fields was probably one of the better fits, if not the best fit, for the Jets. His running ability. The Jets have got a pretty good running game. They got two really good backs. And I think you add him to that. Listen, he was 4-1 with the Steelers, right? When he got benched, if I'm not mistaken, last year.
That's right.
And obviously, you know, Tomlin saw more upside, you know, to Russell. You know, I'm not sure whether that ended up proving itself out to be true. But I am intrigued to see how Fields does. I think Fields will be a better quarterback for the Jets than Russell will be for the Giants. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. I don't know. And the Giants situation is a little bit different because, you know, if they end up drafting Sanders, for example, Shedeur Sanders at number three, you know, you got to figure he's going to be in the lineup sooner rather than later. So, you know, that's going to mean, you know, Russell Wilson is now more of a, you know, expensive backup or, you know, whatever. So, the long answer to your short question was I think Fields, because Fields is going to be the starter, and I don't see the Jets picking a quarterback that's going to end at number seven, that's going to end up, you know, just beating him out, if you will.
Any chance that they pass on Shedeur Sanders and then try to trade back up to get him?
I think there's a very good chance that they don't draft Shedeur at three.
Yep.
I don't really think Shedeur is going to drop far back enough for the Giants to come back in. Okay. I think they got 34 overall, which is in the second round. I could absolutely see them taking, you know, Carter or Hunter at three, because it looks like certainly one or both of them will be available for them. And then I could see them maybe coming back into the first round and maybe like get a Jackson Dart or something like that later in the first, or, you know, I could see that happening more so than coming up and getting Sanders as well.
Great stuff. Thanks, Mark. Always a joy, buddy. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, guys. Enjoy the azaleas.
Good stuff.
That's Mark Canizera from the New York Post.
Did you see that story about the Spanish amateur?
Yeah, I did.
Urinating in Ray's Creek?
I wasn't expecting that.
No, who was? What? How do you how do you explain that? He said he just had to go. When you got to go, you got to go. But there are facilities for that. Come on, man. What are you doing?
I guess he plays a lot of public courses.
What are you doing?
And there aren't a lot of
facilities. Isn't there? They will give you a penalty if you fill out your scorecard with the wrong. Everything is so exact and pristine about Augusta. How do you let this guy continue if he peed in the creek?
Well, especially when he doubles down, as Mark said, and said that he would do it again, right?
That's ridiculous.
And to answer one of Mark's points.
I double dare.
You know how to get golfers to talk after their rounds or to not relieve themselves in Race Creek? Stroke penalty.
Oh.
Oh, so you get
strokes. Mark's right about how much money these guys have. I'm saying strokes.
That's interesting.
Don't talk. If you don't want to talk, we're going to dock you a stroke.
Did you happen to see the videos of the airport that was near Augusta, Georgia? There were like 40 private jets parked.
Did not see that.
Every golfer apparently flies by private jet.
Jose Luis Ballester? Is that who it is? Is that the way I'm saying? That's a Spanish amateur who just had
to
go.
He's an American Spaniard, isn't he? Isn't he American?
Native of Spain.
But he's in the U.S. now and American citizen, I thought. Well, whatever. Let's blame the Spaniards. It's got to be a cultural
thing. I don't know his history. I just know he's 21 and has no manners.
And doesn't believe in
Sorry. You can't pee in the creek, kid. Not unless you're four.
Well, if you got
a toddler on a golf course, maybe. But no.
There is an argument to be made that the great outdoors are nothing but a bathroom.
That's my golf take today. There you go, Dustin.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 the score. Our guy Brad Biggs out in front of it. 2.0 dropped today, Mr. David.
Yeah, how about that?
And Big Z, we talked to him yesterday.
Yeah, we talked to him yesterday. Mac draft today.
He was still working on it.
Still working on it.
And he did pretty well. I like his work.
You do?
Well, you know how I feel about this line of scrimmage being of crucial importance.
Yeah, he's got the Bears taking Kelvin Banks, the tackle from Texas.
That's a good one.
That was also Matt Bowen's choice, I think, on the midday show on Thursday. So maybe that's an idea gaining some steam.
Well, let's listen to what Matt Bowen said. He gave a very detailed explanation of why he likes that pick.
I think the athletic profile, I don't know if that Marshall, I don't know if he falls. I think that's the range you should go in. I really do. I think Will Campbell's going to, first of all, I think Will Campbell's going to go higher than people expect. And look, some teams might grade him as a guard. Okay, I understand that. But just in terms of what he is as a football player, I think he goes higher than number 10. I think Banks is someone that can play at the left tackle position. He's got the athletic profile. He's got great footwork. Did not give up a lot of pressures and sacks in college, played against really good competition. That's someone you really want to develop who has the traits and tools you want at the left tackle position. And what that tells the Bears is it tells that current roster that's getting ready in the offseason program right now that we're going to challenge you. We are bringing in players to challenge you and to compete to take your jobs. And that's what you want. You want the ultimate competitive environment. You know, the veteran players have to understand that. That's part of this. And we didn't mention that at the top, but when you go through a coaching change, hey, everyone's on alert right now. Because when you go through a coaching change, you weren't good enough last year. You simply weren't good enough. Yep. And that's part of playing pro football. I went through it. And they're going to draft players at your same position.
My first reaction to that is Kelvin Banks is probably going to be a fine offensive tackle for a lot of years in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that if he's the third tackle selected, which is according to Biggs's mock, he's got Will Campbell going forward to the Patriots, Armon Membu, who's a right tackle, going ahead of Kelvin Banks at 10, then I would be almost as inclined to move down as I would to take the third tackle off the board. If you are of the belief that you want to rebuild from the trenches and want to focus on both sides of the line of scrimmage, that makes a lot of sense to me. But I also think you might be able to add an asset if you're going to get the third best player at his position at 10. Trading down might allow you still to get an offensive tackle, or if one's already taken, you could go for defensive tackle or defensive pass rusher, and you still could get the same emphasis in terms of the trenches. So I think if Will Campbell's there at 10, you take him. If Membu is there at 10, you consider it. The third tackle at 10, I don't know that I would be as excited. I'm just telling you my honest reaction to it.
That's fair.
But I think you could support it and defend it, but I just don't know if I would be as excited as some other choices.
Can you tell me some of the other choices? Are you talking more like luxury picks?
Yeah, luxury picks. Yeah, okay. Now, according to Biggsy's mock draft, and I think a lot of people would think that Ashton Gentry's probably going to look at the Raiders as a possibility. He might be in the top 10. Tyler Warren at 10, as opposed to the third offensive tackle, might be a luxury choice that you could get behind easily if you're considering the possibility with Ben Johnson as a play caller. Those are the two that come to mind first, Molly. I think those are the guys. You know, Copeland from Michigan, I don't know if that is – that's a little high for him, I would think. That would be too high.
I think a lot of it is matching sort of need with availability. And – I get you. Like, it's always
Loveland.
Loveland
at 10. Yeah, Loveland at 10 would be too high. You know what I mean. The offensive weapon.
Yes, yes.
At that spot in the draft, you'd have to defend as a choice, and because it would be considered a luxury item.
Here's the problem for me. That Banks is, he's 21 in a month. He's a guy who barely just turned 21.
Very young.
He is 6'5", 315 pounds, and he is a legit left tackle. He's a guy that you could see growing into that position, getting better at it. His size and his athleticism probably means he could play a lot of different places, but is capable of playing left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
I love that idea. I love the idea of staying on the line of scrimmage and getting better at the key position on your line, where at the end of the year, you're either going to have to move on from Braxton Jones or you're going to have to pay him.
Fair enough. 312-644-6767. What do you think? There's another draft point we want to get to when we come back.
Mully and Haas, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow, Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.